You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to the Cosmic Tonic podcast. In this episode, we speak with astrologer Vanessa Montgomery about astrology and creativity. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app or by subscribing to us on YouTube. As you know, we are committed to bringing you the best content related to astrology and the occult. We are fully funded by listener support, so please donate to our podcast by visiting the link at the bottom of our homepage at cosmictonic.com. For those of you who've donated, thank you so much. It really helps us keep this podcast going. Thanks again for being here, and we hope you enjoy the show.
All right. So I think that this topic is very Libran. It's just got Libra all over it. I'm thinking it was because I was communicating with Jasmine and something, it was Jasmine's idea. Is that right?
I've always really admired your Instagram and your style. And when I started digging around into your bio and your website, I learned about all the art that you've studied. And I too have studied fashion design and textile design and design photography and all these things. Yeah. And I think I was on your Instagram and you did a post, I think on Keith Haring, or you mentioned Keith Haring, and this was months back. And I, for the life of me, I'm not able to remember because I was checking it out like probably the beginning of the year when we were first talking about you coming on the podcast. This has been a long time coming, by the way.
I know. I can't believe I missed that. That's
But I forgot what you said. I don't even know what the context was, but I was really inspired by it. And I was like, we need to get her on the podcast and have this conversation. One, just because, yes, aesthetically, I'm impressed. Mm. And then two, it's also Eliza does this beautiful reading, creativity reading that I know that a lot of artists book and are really interested in her for that. And I was like, this is just going to mesh well. we need to get on and talk about art and creativity and astrology and how it all flows together. I just think, yeah, this conversation is going to be amazing. So
yeah,
thank you
good
for coming
topic.
On.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for all getting together for a party of four. I'm liking these group pods, actually. It's fun. And are we starting? Should we just start?
I feel like we should introduce you to the audience first. So let's formally welcome you on. We had our informal welcome, but yeah, it is our pleasure to welcome Vanessa Montgomery to the show. And so you and I met, Vanessa, I think 4 years ago. Was it 4 years ago?
Three or four, probably four by now.
I think it was 2018.
18 or
19. Or was it 20? Or you're right, maybe it was 2019. It might have been 19. Through Fresh Voices. So I was hosting the Fresh Voices Summit and you were one of the speakers. And I think our Sag placements got along like a house on fire. And we continued communicating. And then COVID sort of distracted us, or, you know, our long voice memos got interrupted and then like resumed a year later. And maybe they'll keep doing that. But that's partly how I know you. But I also want to share with everyone, you know, bits and pieces of what you do. So I know that you are the resident astrologer for Glamour magazine, and you're the author of 3 books. Is that correct? Is it three?
Three. Third one's coming out in a couple of months.
So exciting.
Yes.
So that's that's Star Power, Cosmic Power, and is it Astro Power, the one that's coming out?
And Astro Power. I'm running out of like star-spangled powers.
Things that a lot of power.
Don't make any sense at all. There would have been a solar power, but it just would have gotten confused with renewable energy, unfortunately.
I'd love to hear about each of those books, and especially the one that's about to come out. Mm-hmm. So let's do that as and when it feels appropriate to loop that in. I know you also are the host of a podcast, your own podcast, mm-hmm. which is called the Astro All-Stars podcast. Mm-hmm. Yep. So with that said, today we're talking about astrology and creativity. Adding on to your bio as much as you like, contradicting me as much as you like, how would you, I guess maybe we could start with you sharing with the audience and with us what your approach to astrology is, like perhaps your main, you know, you can take that as like, take that as you will, what your main strategies and focuses are perhaps in astrology, but then also how you interpret creativity through the lens of astrology.
Okay. Well, it's been a really long road to astrology. I think there's a lot of pressure on people getting into it now. It's all of a sudden it is a job description, and it wasn't when I found it in the 90s. And so there was no pressure on me. And I think that's a really big difference. And I'm very grateful for that. If there was, though, I might have got my act together a bit sooner, but it just gave me a lot of breadth to, yeah, with no pressure, no expectation from me or other people, because it wasn't fashionable, or even it just wasn't on the radar for most people then. And so I just slowly, you know, I looked at everyone's chart, obviously, famous people, see a movie, look at who that was about or the actors in it, look up on my friends and observe them. I was really much more focused on the natal chart. It's modern psychological humanistic astrology, not traditional, although I learned formally. So we did learn a lot of bits and pieces that come from traditional. So I had an awareness, and I had, there were a couple teaching. So one had a background as a psychologist. So she really brought the psychology in. The other, Brian Clark, who's gotten out back into the astrosphere again, which is really great to see. He was studying mythology, and he was doing maybe his master's or something like that on it. So he was bringing a lot of mythology in. And I didn't know a lot about that at the time. So it started to get woven in. And I just had, you know, everyone had to kind of learn a bit about what's he talking about with that, and what's he talking about with the astrology. But it was an excellent grounding. It was just like a bedrock that I didn't even have to do that much more except go on my journey, because it was such a solid grounding in astrology. So really focused on birth charts and the aspects and the houses and the signs and how do people express it. Never bored, always observing. And then I did my year studying transits. So I became more confident in that. And that's really when I started charging and practicing formally, and made myself a little business card and came up with a name, which was different to what I have now. It was Vespertine Astro Queen. But I thought, that's far too Leo South Node. I've got to go towards the North Node, using the astrology to inform the decision of my business, like name. So I thought Astro All Stars is so much more Aquarian North Node, because it's about all of us, and it's about the firmament, and it's about the galaxy of everyone combining. And what would you call it? Like the network of people in astrology, everyone's so bookish and so smart and so interesting. That's such a big draw for me in this world. So yeah, much more appropriate. So yeah, then really going into, I already looked at transits and a bit of just what's going on, and history as well, because of design. When I was at university studying fashion textile design, which was, started in 1999, I was already looking at transits and flavors for design history, of course. And then we were changing into, everything was going into Aquarius, and I was really seeing that with the themes that I was learning about, and just looked into all of that a lot more. So I've kind of brought that through the whole way. And even then I was saying, look, you know, this planet's changing. We've all got to, like, let's start an illustration business, because it's going to start, like, we're going to get more, what you call it, like just illustrative, and more actually in a way that I was doing, and I was getting told I can't do that. But I'm like, you wait, you wait, you'll see. And then it came in and, you know, the computers came in, graphic design came in, and it completely changed textile design to much more illustrative and one-way patterns. Like I was doing just figurative things that was a one-way print. And my textile teacher was saying, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, boring. I want to do it like this. It's bolder. And it's gone that way anyway. And I was saying things like, you know, we'd have people come in and talk to us and their artwork was so beautiful. It was just like, it's called a croquis when you Jasmine, you probably know that you just kind of put out your designs and get your ideas out, but you haven't formally put it into a repeat pattern or anything. You'd go from the croquis. And in business, that's what often an artist will be displaying and selling that. And I was like, this is artwork. They're beautiful. Like you're an artist. You could put that, do you ever sell them and put them on the wall or frame them? And everyone laughed at me. And then, you know, I'm just like, you wait, you'll see. And indeed, in the end, it's kind of gone more that way. And there's been this such a beautiful revival of all different sorts of artistic practice that's involved in many different industries, with that Neptune, I think, going into Pisces, just like a renaissance in art. So that's been really interesting to watch, having had that lens for so long.
So when you think about astrology and creativity, are you looking at, I'm hearing you reference what's going on by transit, like Neptune and Pisces, but then also one would imagine that you're also talking about people's natal placements and like how their natal placements might inform the ways in which they are creative. Yes. And how they are creative. And so maybe you could just share a little more about how, yeah, if you had a client with you and they wanted to know about their creative practice, like how would you approach such a question?
I don't really get those questions. It's funny. Yeah, there's definitely those two levels. So that's one thing to point out. And that's what I've put in the third book coming out. There's the environment, which is, yes, a Neptune, which is, we'll look at as really a lot of the design flavors that are going to be around us for, you know, 14 years. And knowing that that's coming, where is that going to be in your chart? What kind of flavor is that going to be? What industries are going to be stronger that could merge with it, looking at the other outer planets? But a person, I will just look at a chart holistically, really overall. You know, I'll look at things like, you know, is there a big 12th house, 5th house in terms of creativity, 12th house, 5th house? I'll look at that. Obviously their Venus, Neptune, their Sun. Do they have Saturn square their Sun? They're probably not going to be very strong creatively. You know, I've seen plenty of Leos with that. Not strong creatively. There's going to be like a block, like someone has overshadowed them and they do not have that confidence to shine. It's like it's a challenge to get through. So I would really look at that and I'll just ask them about it, where they're at with that, and gauge if they've worked through it or if they're still really under whoever put that bushel over their head, you know. And I've seen people that, like, think of one Leo, she wants so much to pick up a paintbrush and put colors on it and put it on the canvas, and she can't do it. She's just this, it's just like an internalized block from her dad. You know, it's the Saturn and the Sun, and I don't like to gender planets, but, you know, that system works when someone's grown up in a system where the dad's been really dominant and taken that solar role and the Saturnian role. So I'll really look at things like that, or if Chiron is impinging, or on the other hand, like if they've got a really strong flow from Neptune, like how is that working for them? Where is that at? So people definitely haven't been coming for, I've got a creative block, or they've come for, like, you write, I could do with a mentor. And so it's gone that way. There's been people that I'll just notice, like someone had a moon in the 12th in Aquarius and a Leo sun, so full moon. And I just asked her actually about writing. You know, she was obviously like, she really thought a lot. She researched. And I was just like, have you ever thought about writing this stuff down? I've just got this feeling that there's a writer inside you. There's books inside you. And so three books down after that, she just like unleashed and she wrote all these books. She's self-published. She's got a natural cosmetics business. So she kind of merged the two and yeah, she just went for it. So it was like this permission or something. It was 12th. She wasn't even that aware of it, but she was. So that was interesting. And that's where I thought it was interesting looking at you, Eliza, having that offering and then people consciously coming with a conscious idea of I want to, yeah, maybe have a mentor, have guidance with this. And I'm super curious about how that works. Because I'll go quite intuitively, I think, like that moon thing, that's mm-hmm. a bit of knowing astrology and a lot of intuitive tapping into that person.
Yeah. It for me also, it's very intuitive. I would say because I am who I am, I tend to attract writers, which is, you know, that's its own specific niche within this broader genre. So with that, I'm often looking at Mercury, where Mercury is placed. I in my own chart, even you can read into this. Like I have Mercury in Scorpio. I'm writing essentially a true crime book. It's like quite, and my novel arguably had a lot of sexual taboo that I didn't realize was taboo, but I was told later that it was quite embarrassing for some people to read. So it's like, so I can see that into my own chart. I have also seen that with other people, though, depending on where their Mercury is placed. Is your Mercury in Sag?
That's another. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You can correct me. This is not your experience, but my experience with Mercury in Sag is that, like, for me, I'm like word constipated. I have to squeeze it out. It's like milking a rock. But Mercury in Sag people, it's like whoosh. It's all just.
And conjunct Venus, it's like, I love it. Like, once you get started, it's such a good time and they're prolific. Like, I always thought, oh gosh, how am I going to fill a whole book? Step aside. I'm like, how can I now? Like, I got started. I'm like, how am I going to fit this into a book? I've got a limited number of pages. It's not my choice, the page count. And now that's set for each book in this series. And I'm just like, I've learned to put the ideas that then start to branch out, and there are many, into a file. And I've sort of learned to do this file on my iPad where I just start to put ideas so that I can let it go and don't feel like I have to mush everything in. Like, it's classic Sag. And I can really see why Mercury in Sagittarius is not at strength, because it's too much. It's not too much, but you've got to learn to work with that. And that's where I think it's interesting to do the astrology combination mentoring. It's like everything's a strength if you use it in a way that it will be a strength, or otherwise it's really going to work against you. You've got to go with what it is and understand how to drive that thing.
Someone like me could look on your placement of Mercury and Sag with all of the words coming out fecundly with great envy, whereas, you know, I think every person, depending on their unique setup, as you said, Vanessa, they're going to be, you know, positive aspects and challenges, of course, with anything in astrology. So when someone comes to me for that consultation, often they will have a project or projects that they're working on, and they will have specific questions related to that project. But I can also, I'm always interested in the surrounding planets and placements as well, including the asteroids. I've had one person who was working on a book around motherhood, and she had Ceres, like, I forget the exact placement, but Ceres was really prominently placed. It might have been next to her Mercury, or it might have been next to her Moon. Something like that. So I just think it's, if someone comes to me with that intention and they can tell me about their project and I'm looking at their chart, it tends to come very clear what to focus on, and it will be different for everybody. But I do find for writers, I'm always looking at Mercury. For visual artists, I'm looking at Venus often. And that I find interesting too, elementally, because often someone with prominent earthy Venuses, or so Venus in an earth sign, but also sun in an earth sign, they will express themselves in the physical realm in some way. So, you know, I've seen that through ceramics or textiles, like we were saying. But also, you know, I was thinking about a friend of mine who is a Sun Taurus person, and he's a writer, But he will spend hours and hours and hours, you know, like 20 hours, 50 hours building a superhero outfit for a Halloween party and just like comprising it, all of the details. I don't actually remember much of his chart except for his sun sign and his moon sign. And he's getting into making bread. He makes jams, he makes kombucha. So, you know, involving the physical world in some way. Mm. Kestrel, I'm thinking about you too, with your dancing, and you have Venus and Virgo, and it's in the first house. So it's very embodied, and it's very, there's such a meticulousness when it comes to dancing as well. Mm. I mean, I think Virgo can manifest in so many ways creatively, but those are just a few examples.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like I was thinking about, you know, the approach with this podcast and my view on creativity, and I identify probably first and foremost as a creative person. You know, people have all their identities, and it's just made me realize like I am like, I'm a creative person, and that's just the beginning and the end. And so I see everyone else as being an inherently creative people. It's just how that is. And yeah, you can go into the elements and see what type that is. Like someone with a lot of air, they'll be very conceptual. I know with Sagittarius, without anything to ground it, there's a lot of big ideas and a seeking to understand. You don't necessarily have to do anything with it though. It's just the ideas. So there's plenty of Sagittarians that talk a big talk and they're quite happy with that. But yeah, Eliza, you're correct. The earth really needs to do something with it. Virgo needs to be like, well, how can I use this? Otherwise I can't even engage with it. Like I've got a couple friends that one's an Aquarius and one is Virgo. And, you know, I ran a talk by them both and it was great because they had such different approaches to it and things that they tapped into. So one was like loving the ideas and the history. It's Neptune through the signs and how that expresses. And she just loved all those ideas. Whereas the Virgo's like, I can't even like engage with this because you're not bringing it into the present moment. Like you're not bringing it into the now. And thankfully she just said it straight out so that she wasn't being polite. And, which is being nice enough about it, but it was so useful because I don't have those placements and I was off with the Aquarius having a great time up here. So anyone listening that had those earthy placements or needed something practical or to ground it into now, or how do I even situate myself into that? I can't. So it opened it up and it just made it so much better. And I've always remembered that and bring it into a lot of what I do. Otherwise, I would just have this audience where I'm losing all the like earthy people, and the Aquarians are having a great time and the Sagittarians. So, and yeah, make it pretty so you catch the Librans and the Pisces. There's all those, like, and that's one thing, one approach you can take, even if it's just the elements. But then you can bring in each sign, like, what are people that this is really how they engage with the world? How are they going to engage with this work? What am I giving them to engage? I went to a workshop on the weekend and someone in there gave an experience that she was a teacher or she had a teacher friend. I think it was a teacher friend who divided the class up, a primary school class, into four based on their element their Mercury was in. For learning, and she had great success because she was able to clearly speak to each element of the Mercuries. I thought that was super interesting. So yeah, in this context, you could do other Mercury, certainly the Venus, I think the Sun, so people can, you know, understand how they can shine. And yeah, I think it's definitely the whole chart. I don't often break it down to one thing. So it was interesting even hearing that she just went honed in on the Mercury so much. And like I look at the sun a lot. That's what's come to me, the sun, which is why I wrote a book on the sun. I was just seeing it so much in my readings. So it's more like direction and how do I shine, and basically millennial women not being straight women, not being centered in the sun as one should, and they were externalizing. So that's probably more what I've had come to me, which was super interesting. I just found out about self-objectification theory, and theories like that. So I'm like, oh my God, I knew it, but someone's put it into this formal thing. So I've just started going down that road. But that's what I've been seeing in part through these clients that are not shining their sun. And, you know, one of my big things is the gender stereotypes that are just being perpetuated through astrology and limiting, whereas astrology could be a tool for liberation, and it's not often being used that way. So, yeah, the sun. And what about, like, let's hear from Kestrel and Jasmine as well. It's always interesting to hear from astrologers that can speak their experience through their chart and what they've learned. That's always a favorite of mine to hear that. So Kestrel, like, with that Leo sun, and Jasmine with that Libran sun. And I'm seeing Kestrel, like, dancing all the time in my feed. I'm just, when I realize you're a Leo, I'm just like, okay, that makes sense, because Leos love dancing. And Jasmine with the design, of course you've got a design background, that makes so much sense. And Sag is writing, the two Sages are writing. We're like
both, yeah, both you and Eliza, yeah. I was actually wondering if you could define self-objectification and what you discovered around that a little bit more. I was wondering if you could tease that out a little bit.
It's definitely an extra bit, and I haven't gotten to read much because I just saw it. But it's like, you know, we're socialized, like, and have a history of, as, you know, women, that we're not the sun. We're told in astrology the sun is a male in your life. He. Right. I just picked up a new book. I went to a bookshop to see what's happening with the astrology and popular astrology. And, you know, there was this book that looked really pretty. It was beautiful. It went through all the planets and the signs. And I looked at the sun, and the first words were, the sun is a male planet. He is the king. You know, and so
what year?
This is a new book. This is a new book. It's fresh onto the shelves, fresh out of the printers. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, the dismay, because there's other, like, I'm just starting to look at statistics for all these things that we all know, but it just helps, you know. Right. And so this self-objectification is that if you're aware of yourself, thinking of yourself, how you're being perceived because your values on how you look. You know, which we're taught to do and rewarded a lot for as women, you know, different levels of, depending on your experience. But it gives you a lot of extra cognitive load, which means you're going to do much worse on anything else that you're doing. You're also not aware of your inner experience because you're focusing your attention on trying to get into an observer's view of yourself, but not the spiritual self-observance. This not being centered, which to me as an astrologer, I hear you're not sitting in your sun, like the sun shines out from here. When you're thinking about how other people perceive you, you like doing the opposite. So it was saying, you know, you don't feel, you're not as aware of your inner state, how you feel about things, your responses, if you're even cold or not, what your heartbeat's doing. And on the spiritual side of things, I think, you know, you're doing the opposite of where you're meant to be going, which is very, like, it's centered and in flow. Can't be in flow if you're outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. So that was just interesting to bring into what I was seeing with my clients, which was they were making all their decisions not centered in themselves, centered in what's best for their boyfriend. And I'm just like, and then wondering why things aren't working out and they're not feeling happy or fulfilled with a certain thing. And I'm just like, do you know that you're doing this? You know, it's socialized. So it's just good to take a step back and be aware of it. Okay, let's flip it around. Okay, so what would it look like if you were to make a decision about where you live, for instance, that would support you and your study or your ambition to do this, this, or this? Because most have this ambition or a goal. They've got a clear thing, but they're not embracing it, and they're centering the sun, their partner. So it's a real paradigm shift when you can get someone to shift into their center. And, you know, there'll be things like, sometimes I'll have people bring up things that are really extreme in their relationship that's very gendered and absolutely not working for them. And I'm like super feminist, so I'll hone in on this stuff, because how's it going to work if you never really get centered? And they'll be like, oh, but I can't say that because of his ego. And I'll be like, what about Your ego. Again, we're back to the sun. So there was just so much sun. So hence sun book. And I'm continually thinking of things that I wish I put in there, but, you know, Sagittarius life, just write another one and put it in that one. So very much the sun. And yeah, again, with the creativity, I think it's interesting. Dr. DeMartini, who was married to Athena Starwarm. So he's another mega sag. And he talks about having a void around something that's been maybe a challenge in your life and you start to focus on it a lot. So as astrologers, we might see that maybe as Saturn or a lack of an element. So if you have a lack of like, say, air, which is, say, writing, that could be actually the writer, believe it or not, or a lack of fire, attention, that could be the person that really needs to get out and import that somehow through their life. So import that attention. Whereas someone with an overabundance may go the other way, surprisingly. So a lot of fire might be actually a bit shy and not really need the attention, can handle it, but doesn't really need it so much. So there's so many factors involved. But yeah, personally, I just think everyone's creative. So it's just not a void that I have that I would even think about, which is why I like it when people bring up these things that, oh, I wouldn't have considered that. Of course, a lot of people struggle with that. And yeah, there's more to it, which the astrology can show us. And then we ask about their life. Okay, who was that Saturn, or how is this missing, or what is the struggle? And to me, it's often just get a shift of mindset, but that's not the case for everyone either. Did I answer the question? I've noticed I often don't answer questions. I just go on down
the path. Oh, you answered the question and then some. Thank you.
And yeah, the extra always.
But no, we can definitely start digging around into charts. I've heard you make several references to your chart. So I'm kind of interested in your entire chart. I haven't seen it, but yeah, I think talking a little bit about Kestrel's newfound love of pole dancing and how I'm actually really curious how you feel like it shows up in your chart. I mean, I have my own impression of how it shows up in your chart, Kestrel, but what do you think as far as where it comes from and maybe what has inspired you down this trek as far as transits and stuff like that are concerned?
Yes.
So juicy.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, Vanessa, you have this confidence of claiming yourself as a creative person. And I would only say maybe in the last decade, I've started to perceive myself as a creative person. And it's really interesting too, to get your perspective, Eliza, that Venus in the first house of Virgo, as part of it, that does seem accurate, but it was really the Venus, the most recent Venus retrograde in Capricorn that brought it in my fifth house. But I have always felt most embodied and expressive by using my body. When I dance, I feel most like myself. And I'm very physical. I mean, I guess I have that Earth, Venus, and Virgo, and then I also have an Earth, Mars. So I think that's where some of it comes from. And that maybe that cat fifth house too.
And I always see like Leos as being really physical. There's something really instinctual and primal. And as a fire sign, but Sagittarius, I think we can get really lost in our heads, even though we look good in sports gear, doesn't mean that we're very physical. I like to think so anyway. But Leos is something that, you know, we always can look at the other signs for what maybe we could be, you know, they can model for us. And for me, I look at Leos and that ability to express from the self and in the moment, whereas I'm like all conceptualizing things and going off on some tangent, but Leos will just do it. And if there's something wrong, they'll roar about it and they'll be, there's a physicality. So, and there's that dance thing that comes in and then there's your earth placements, but I do see it. And you just said, I feel most like myself. So that's, to me, I hear the sun again, like that centers you back in who I am, which is quite, there's a Leo statement around that.
Yeah. And it's really interesting too, because that sun's in the 12th. And so I start to think more about my psychological creativity and being a psychotherapist and illuminating things. But there is this place with that sun. It's in the first deck and it's not quite in the spotlight, but there is something about the spotlight where I feel safe because it's very rehearsed. You know, it actually allows me to bring upon myself a different personality than my day-to-day personality. And I find, you know, because I'm also very introverted, and I think it's a really great expression of that sun, because I find a lot of actors are introverted and we have this deep inner world going on as well. So that's sort of what's coming alive for me as well. And I can be playful with it too. I mean, yes. The dance is so playful and fun. And then the musical component of it as well.
Yeah. Interesting too, like it sounds so 12th house. There were a few tells there about like also finding yourself, like, you know, the idea is that it's harder to find those planets in the 12th and finding a doorway to that, which you found, you said, you know, really only started like 10 years ago, the creative self. And yeah, going beyond the self, like something where you can get into character and act. Like I remember, because my bedrock is just so solid, people talk, the teacher's talking about the sun in the 12th, you know, getting into characters and being someone else, like the cosplay that's come around would be so perfect for 12th house people. But they gave an example of a group that would meet up every year in a different part of the world. No one knew each other's actual daily personalities or names or anything. They'll just meet up as these like characters and play out this interesting thing. It just sounded like so 12th house, because you've got to go find a vehicle to get beyond yourself. There's another girl that shows up on my feeds all the time. I wonder what her placements are. She's always showing footage from her sexy dancing classes. So she's doing all this like floor work, and then she's on the pole. Kajia, she's an opera singer, and she's like rolling around in these hardcore stilettos and skimpy outfits on the pole, and is slowly getting better and better and better because core strength, you know, is
exactly
real. Yeah.
I relate. It's been interesting to watch my own progression. It's very new. I've always danced though, but the pole is very brand new. Since February.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a climber though. So I have a lot of already baseline strength going
on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's fun. It's interesting that I've been posting it because I'm also very shy. And then also just seeing the attention it gets. And it's been really fun. And it's just been fun to bring people along the journey with me and into inspiring lots of people. Like I have a woman through a mutual friend and supporter of the podcast, this woman, Anya Kotz, and one of her listeners discovered me, and now she's going to a pole class, an intro and beginner pole class with me tomorrow.
That's hilarious.
And it's cool because it's so empowering for women talking about that feminism. I mean, and I love it because all bodies show up, and it's like giving everybody an opportunity to be expressive and creative within their own body. You know, it's not like my way is the only way. There's so many different ways to, you know, dance and express ourselves that are unique. You know, not having to fit in.
Yeah. Yeah. And hitting a few taboos too.
Yeah.
In a way, like just because of the background of pole dancing, where it comes from. And, you know, that's from stripping basically. Mm-hmm. And it's taboo and it's not acceptable. And this, you know, it deals with sexuality and money and women. Like that's the background. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. And us claiming our own power, you know, because
and not being like, well, I'm not going to care about your taboo. I'm just going to do it, whatever.
Exactly. Well, the two are really separate, right? Maybe you can talk about that a little bit, Kestrel. Stripping and pole dancing are technically two different things. It just depends on how you're using it and what context you're actually doing it in, because not all pole dancers are strippers, and not vice versa, right?
True.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it just, gosh, how do I put language to this? Again, I just feel so in my body. It's creative. It's empowering. I mean, I never wore booty shorts when I was young. I'm like, fuck it. This is my body. I don't care, you know? And
It looks good too.
Keep coaching up the good 50, work. Folks. I'm coaching 50.
Half a century.
Almost getting there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you're like making that divide, and it's Jasmine, because what I do see is it does, like, the roots of stripping is still in there, because girls are wearing skimpy underwear, the girls that shop on the feed, and then the stilettos are there. So it's the background is informing how people are doing this. Like, I first saw pole things in a circus, like doing it differently, but there was a local circus that was really alternative and but also very professional, and they would do lots of different tricks on the pole and things that I've seen come through as well, so in like sexy dancing world. But that was the first, you know, thing I ever saw, and then we sort of start to see it come through from this kind of underworld hidden place into a mainstream thing. So I would say it's something that's becoming gentrified and mainstream, but it still has a link to those roots. That's what I would think. They're definitely not completely separate, but someone like Kestrel obviously doesn't have that background, and there's no real link, but there's still this, like, this a link. There's still a link that you'll be tapping into, but gentrified, mm-hmm. or just like an mainstream, a new incarnation. It's been interesting to see that come through.
Yeah. And it's interesting that I love that you use a new incarnation, and it does feel like a part of my own incarnation, which feels very solar to me.
Mm. And it's interesting to hear, interested in hearing the other girl that's on a lot that's doing that, like it's completely different to her, for her as well. And she's clearly embracing something, and maybe they're, for some people, there is a sexuality thing, and certainly a physicality, and really working in with the body and getting out of the mind and doing things that might be, you know, back in the day, there's just like, it's, things have become more, it's okay to do, like not shy away from, even like there's a lot of sexual poses as well. But that's in also like, you know, booty dancing and twerking, and like all this just wasn't around mainstream before, and now it is. So it's just been interesting, at least from my point of view, to watch that come in.
Mm-hmm. So would you associate that with any of the outer planet transits? Like, you could think about it perhaps as Uranus and Taurus in this Venus led sign, or it could even still be Neptune and Pisces. I'm just curious if you thought about that at all.
I haven't, actually. That's a good point. That's something I didn't think about, why that change started coming through. I'm not sure. I've just watched a progression, and I haven't so much applied the astrology. Like, in Australia here, we started getting like American style table dancing. We didn't have it here before, so I watched it kind of come through.
What year was that? Watched,
like in the 90s.
Okay.
And then it just slowly started going more out into the culture. And then because of socials, I could see like I knew a girl that was teaching pole dancing. She has like an athletic background as a figure skater. So she was teaching, and just watching it kind of come through. So I'm not sure. It was definitely well before Uranus and Taurus, but things do like up level when those changes happen. So I'm going to go with a bit of Uranus and Taurus, and maybe with the nodal Taurus Scorpio axis at the moment, possibly amplifying something that was already existing and like up leveling more. What do you guys think? Even with like twerking, that was a big thing, and doing booty dancing and things like that coming more mainstream. Like, it's from a culture that we don't have here. We're importing it, and it's all from the US, basically. But it's global. Well,
I'm also thinking about in the 90s, Neptune was in Capricorn, you know? I don't know those exact things off the top of my head, but I'm just thinking about these Neptune transits and these 14-year-long periods and how they really do play into
so much
and how we perceive art and how Neptune does have such an influence on art, you know, because you're talking about the 90s, and I do remember that, and I do remember what it was like during that period.
Yeah. And the shift, like the shift.
So yeah. Neptune it's gradual. Is Neptune is gradual too, but it is. And then but like, go ahead.
Oh, but it's still, you can see the change coming with like doing the talk on Neptune. Like I was used to tap into that anyway, but doing a talk on it really made me obviously get my ideas together and get a like timeline going, and it opened it up even more. And it just made me think like I didn't relate too much in the, say, 80s when there was like Neptune was in Capricorn. And in the 70s, I did all that Sag. Obviously, I was like just in my element. And then the 80s, I didn't relate to people wanting to look mature and businesslike and the shoulder pads. I love shoulder pads now because I've got little shoulders. But I did. There was a lot I just didn't relate to the material side. I was just really interested in artists and creative things and mystical things and immature things because my immature side. But then it shifted and it really, because I've just got no earth in my chart, I just didn't relate to when there's a lot of earthy things. And it just made me realize that, you know, that cyclical nature, your time will always come. And if you're not having your time now because you've got a bunch of planets just in one element or two, I've just mostly got a lot of air and fire, it will change, but it's not your time. So just keep working in the background. But yeah, it's Neptune. It's all about Neptune with not all, there's other influences, but it's such a major, major, major influence. 14 years. Like think about Neptune in Pisces now. It's been such a beautiful artistic renaissance. It's been amazing. It's certainly a Neptunian Pisces theme, but when it's over, it's over. No more unicorns. When Neptune's in Aries, goodbye unicorns and crystals. Hello, fire walking and transcending through the heat of the coals, burning your feet. That's what I'm thinking. And we'll look back on this time. Like people will look back and be like, oh my gosh, you bunch of hippies. You crystal waving bunch of unicorn hippies. They'll look back that didn't come through this time as like you can conceptualize it now and package it looking in retrospect from somewhere where it's not like this. But 14-year period, when you're in it, you just think that's it. And kids growing into this, they don't know anything else. The time will change and you either change with it or you're going to be like crystals and unicorns and be totally yesterday's news. Like, you know, times change. I think that is hilarious and I love thinking about that and, just conceptualizing that kind of idea. Do you guys think about that?
I'm thinking about it now. I'm thinking about it now. For me specifically in my chart, I'm a Virgo rising like Kestrel and Neptune has been in my seventh house. And in 2008, I moved back to Houston. I went through a divorce and in 2009 I started art school, but that's exactly the time that I met my current partner and we've almost been together for 14 years. And I've just been thinking about how that's played out in our creative lives and our endeavors. In 2014, we took over a bar here in Houston, Texas. And he is a music producer and a musician and a very well-renowned DJ here in the US and in Houston. And this bar has just been basically our creative canvas. And now that this transit is kind of coming to a close, I can also see how everything that we've done up until this point in our lives and in our relationship, we've put into this space. And we just finished this major remodel. There's been so much that has gone into it creatively. Murals, working with all different kinds of artists. We have people traveling from all over the world that are coming to see the space. We have different performers there all the time. We know we're pretty sought out now, too, with people, different musicians and DJs that are traveling to Houston. They want to come spin at our spot. And just everything that's gone into it, and all of my, you know, design background, photography, you know, everything that I've done a lot of work with video and stuff like that too. My own fashion design, lots of graphic design as well. But now I kind of see how it's all come together, and doing it all and even going to school, and you probably can attest to this too, Vanessa. It's like you don't really know where you're going with this, but then it ends up somewhere. And usually the process is so much longer than you ever imagine. Or you know this too with writing, Eliza. You just start and you just kind of see what happens, and then you end up somewhere with it. And it's, you know, sometimes it's a 10-15 year long endeavor, but yeah, I'm going to think a lot more about these Neptune transits and these 14-year-long cycles and how they show up, because now that I'm thinking about it, and I've lived through a few of them now.
Exactly.
It kind of makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Yeah, looking at there's how the birth chart is situated, and then, of course, those transits that come through, and planning for that, or just even tapping in, you've got 14 years it's going to be in a house of your chart. It's a long time. How are you already expressing it, or how are you, or is it like, yeah, what planets is it hitting, if anything, or is there something else that's a headline? It's same with Uranus, I think, because it's such a long transit that can be really taken advantage of, both of them, and not shied away from either. Like when you start to see it expressing, embrace it.
Oh, why not, totally. Like, yeah.
Or my Sag is like, why not dial it up?
We've been talking about these like outer planet transits, but I'm curious if you've ever observed how your own relationship with creativity waxes and wanes through the season. So you, potentially literally through the moon cycle, like new moon versus full moon or anything in between, but potentially also sun sign seasons. I notice, and this might be because I'm a Leo rising, so my ruling planet is the sun. I notice that I'm very affected by where the sun is. Like Virgo season, inevitably, I do want to get down to business. I do want to organize. I want to file away and like tidy and parse. Whereas in Leo season, I want to more have fun and just enjoy myself. And I know these are cliches and they align with the Northern Hemisphere's summer and fall, but I'm just wondering if when it comes to short-term transits, if you've ever tracked like your ebbs and flow with what's going on.
Yes, I've really noticed, like I followed the lunar cycle for a long time, and I did work in hospitality for a while, and I really was observing everyone. So yeah, the full moon vibe, new moon vibes, what the Scorpios were doing on full moons, like how are you feeling, like how's it going, and a lot of observation in the field. Probably like less centered on myself, like a lot of 7th, 8th and 11th house placements, really observing beyond myself, but also noticing, like, I love the full moon energy. I love it's so expressive. In terms of the sun, I love the fire seasons as well. It's trining a massive stellium that I have. I've also got the moon in Aries. There's six planets in fire and they light up. I love Leo season. I love it so much. I just literally feel like dancing. I've been playing heaps of music. I have been dancing around in my studio, actually. I'm like, yeah, I need to like get moving again. And I love tribal belly dance. I've been watching some of those and like doing some moves just myself. I've got to get physical because I'm so in my head and sitting down so much, which has been a challenge for all the Sag and Aries. But I do find that. And I do find also the hemispheres of the chart where the sun's going through when it starts to rise up to the top of the chart. So Aquarius rules my midheaven. I love that period. I do feel like, I feel like I need to be more on show. I want to get out there more. I want to connect more. I can really sense how this is a good period for if I ever launched anything. This is really the time to do it. I feel like getting out there. And yeah, definitely tracking those things. Like for a long time, I look more at the outer planets because they're just so full on for so, so long and so transformative. But yeah, there are those smaller cycles in there. But I The moon I probably pay less attention to because it's just so quick. So I'll just sort of look at the sign and the vibe and notice how things are and really embrace that full moon and really embrace the new moon and in like that in relation to physical menstrual cycles as well. I always really noticed that. And now I'm over half a century old, so I don't have a period anymore. That's really interesting. So that physical cycle, when that ends, you've got the lunar cycle, but I feel like it's actually has less, there has less strength to it. It's a really different shift, right, Kestrel? Like it's so different. And from this place, when I see women that are still like in that cycle, it's compelling. Like it's amazing. I miss my cycle. I really enjoyed that. But now I'm starting to come into, actually, I'm really enjoying this. It's very stable and I was pretty stable anyway, but even more so, I don't have those really new moon phases. And I think we don't hear much about this. I never heard people talk about it much. And I feel a bit ripped off actually, because I had like that peri for so long, I didn't even know I was having it or what it was. And I feel like I missed out. With Taurus rising, I love like those body cycles and getting into my body and feeling those things. I really embrace it. And it's actually something that I want to talk more about somehow. And I've noticed women starting to come through and start writing books on these things and rebrand it, because I was looking things up and it's also negative and doom and gloom and completely misogynist take on it, whereas actually it's something to be really celebrated and it used to be, and there's lots of benefits and positives. And yeah, just I think it's got the worst branding ever.
Anyway, that's not about
creativity, but yeah,
I so love you giving voice to it. I didn't know that would even come up today, but I do think it becomes a more creative time of your life too, potentially.
Different, like
you're different, but there's a different energy around it completely though.
I did a talk on Chiron, like I just started doing live talks and pushing out more into that just before COVID. So I did my first in real life live talk, and it was on Chiron in Aries, and the people that come to the official kind of group here are much older, mostly women. So I hand the mic around for like to include people, seventh house. You know, I'm saying, you know, clearly you guys have gone through your Chiron return. How was it for you? How do you feel now? Because a big part of that shift is you are in your second spring, as I think it's Chinese call it, possibly Japanese, second spring. And overwhelmingly everyone said I finally didn't care what people thought anymore and just did what I wanted to do. Extremely positive shift. So if you bring that to creativity, I'm wondering if there's a lot of people that just shift into, you know what, I'm going to finally do that thing. I'm going to write the book. I'm going to take up painting. I'm going to do some dancing, whatever it is. And if you've had children, you're probably much more free to do those things now, which is why it can be called the second spring. Like you live for you now is the positive side of it. I've always lived for me because I'm child free, but a part of the point. But yeah, for people that haven't had that situation, they've had to be so responsible, it's the second spring. So in terms of creativity, now's the time. If not now, then when? And you've got that experience too, and so much richness and resources now to draw from and to express, I would think.
I would agree. I'm feeling it. I feel like you're speaking to me.
I'm just wondering, we're probably reaching the end of our time. I just want to leave space for anyone to add last comments or thoughts before we wind down.
I'll say one of the titles for this that Jasmine wrote was it was the astrology of creativity, but also the astrology and the creative muse. So I looked up the muses, and there's asteroids for each muse. So one thing people could do is look at where the muse asteroids are in your chart.
I love that idea. That's great. Maybe we can write their names in the show notes so they can look them up.
It's a good idea. And we're going to talk a bit about the, which we won't go into, I'll just mention the Mars retrograde in Gemini. Mm. And I just was thinking, oh, I wonder who had that. And I looked up Virginia Woolf and she had Mars retro in Gemini. And I was thinking writers. So it could be interesting looking at her transits and how that Mars retro showed up for her.
Anyway, she was born with that natally?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't know that. I love Virginia. Yeah. What's her ascendant? Do you know?
I have got it here. So I will just have a look. It is, oh yeah, and Gemini. So she's got Gemini ascendant, south node in Gemini in the 12th conjunct her ascendant. A massive, massive stellium in the 12th house. Very creative. I just think the 12th and Pisces are super. Like, all signs are creative in their own way, but there's just this extra, I think, with the Pisces, Neptune, 12th stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, massive stellium. And Mercury in Aquarius, Sun in Aquarius for also mm-hmm. writing, but coming out of that 12th. And, you know, didn't she slip in between sanity and not quite having a grip? You know, in and out of that 12th, the gift and the burden of it. And the Mars is in the first in the Gemini, 27 degrees retrograde. So intuitively just like, oh, look up her. Oh, look, there it is. I don't have to comb through a million charts to find it. So,
well, yeah. It's interesting that this Mars retrograde will be squaring Neptune by sign. Just based on everything.
And by degree at points. I think it's stations. Points. I think it's stations.
25, right?
25.
Yeah, lots of Neptune and also quite long aspects to Mercury as well through this period, the retrograde period and direct, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, we won't go into it because it's just like a whole podcast on that. But
yeah,
it's something to consider.
It's interesting to think about how it might disrupt creative flow. Like we're talking a lot about, you know, this 14-year cycle and how it's showed up and manifested for the collective and us as individuals. And then this Mars coming through, and I'm just thinking out loud here about what could be potentially disruptive about what you've done over the last 14 years and how you might have to reassess what you've done and restructure what you've done.
And a little bit of redirecting.
And like how it's affecting your mind as well. Like Gemini is such a sign of the mind and changing your thinking around, you know, creative processes and things of that nature.
But I always look at, the Gemini and Pisces, and same with Sag and Pisces square, you know, mm-hmm. Pisces and Neptune are so about that direct mystical or just direct, you could say creative, direct channel experience. Mm-hmm. And then Gemini is just like trying to rationalize everything as a Sag. And that's where that, to me, that square is very much on that. So I guess you bring into the action, or I think the deceptiveness under could be a big part of this. And there's been so much like deceptive, like warfare through words and deceptiveness online. Like, you know, you've got countries with all these bots trying to mess everyone up. I see it a lot as that. So maybe we'll get a bit more savvy, or maybe they'll just be more of it. I don't know. But we need to get more savvy. Everyone's gotten so inflamed on language and in like battling on ideas, these little tussles, whereas the big battle is not, it's like this distraction.
Yeah, it really makes me think, Mars retrograde in Gemini really makes me think of just trolls.
Absolutely. Trying to like get something going.
And you know, so much of our creativity, so much of our you know, our creative products or output is shared online. That has become a huge vehicle. Social media has become a huge vehicle to share ourselves, to share our sun. And I think, you know, Mars and Gemini retrograde, that just seems like the hecklers in the audience. And then maybe that's a bit pessimistic, but to me, it just seems like it's going to be like online spaces might be a little on the fritz and perhaps hostile. So for folks who are wondering when this is happening, it's I believe it stations October 30th, mm-hmm. and it stations direct on January 12th. So I mean, we're kind of in it now. Like, we're not in it, but Mars is not going to leave Gemini until March 25th. So
yeah,
seven months of Mars in Gemini.
So for anyone on the mutable cross, for a start, for Geminis, you get like a lot of go or reverse and then go again. Mm-hmm. Sagittarius will get the opposition. So watch that with the online. Don't be drawn in. I agree, Eliza. Yeah, online spaces. And I'm just thinking, just be aware, like, how are you going to approach this? It's retrograde. Let's rethink that and rethink approaches and what's worth spending your time on, and don't get into those.
Exactly.
You're probably arguing with a bot.
Exactly. Right. Or maybe you get off the online spaces and you take up, you know, some interests that you haven't done in forever, you know, or you learn something new. For 7 months, that's a pretty good stretch of time. And you're talking about like, you know, if you go back to school, it's like two semesters. It is an opportunity to potentially learn a new skill set or take up a trade. That's what I plan on doing. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this Mars retrograde. It's going to be disruptive, maybe a little ugly. So I'm just going to go back to school, maybe. You know, I mean, when in doubt,
go study something.
Go study something. Speaking my language. Learn something, yeah. But anyways.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, I've got the moon in Aries, as does Eliza, and how do I feel about something moon? I feel angry. Like, I feel motivated. If I can, like, engage that moon, I can feel really motivated to action. And I have Mars in Pisces, so generally I'm okay just to, like, blob about and feel things. But if I can engage that moon, I know that I can actually get some traction on something, and it gets all the Sag going because they trine. And so if something online like engages me, or like I feel annoyed about something that I keep seeing, I have realized that I just go and do something about it. So I will go and write something myself and make a bigger thing, or how can I change this? I can see that this is a thing. How can I put something else into the world? So maybe that's for a lot of people through communication or walking your talk or writing or learning more about it.
Let's close with you telling us a little bit about your book that's coming out and how people can find you.
Okay. So the third book is called Astro Power, and it's about prediction and destiny point. I would look at the North Node for, and the whole chart, but so North Node-y. And like a North Star. So it's all about, it does a bit of a refresher over like modes, signs, elements, but the aspects, all the bits I had to put through again. And it really focuses in on the planets and getting a lot of depth about, well, where did these archetypes come from? Like, it's all really so informed by ancient Greco-Rome. So I watch a lot of documentaries and did a lot of research, just opening that up a bit more and looking at where they came from. Where did those myths and ideas come from before extremely misogynist Greco-Rome, you know? And this, you know, it has a lot of things to share with us, but a lot of things that need to be dispelled rather than perpetuated. It's not helping the main audience of astrology, which is women, you know, young women generally, stop rolling this stuff out. So I did a lot of that. It like really opens up, well, why are these themes like that with the planets? So rather than have to rely on someone else's interpretation of something, if you have enough, you know, I'm grateful for my bedrock, because I don't need to like look up what someone else says about it. So I'm trying to share that in these books. So that's what this does, really dives into that. And then at the end, we go through someone's chart and transits just as a demonstration. This is how you do it. But the bulk of it is really going in depth into those planets and bringing through the themes, hopefully getting the feeling across, history, a bit of humor as always, a bit of like recontextualizing, like, this is what I'm doing, this is why, this is a bit misogynist, so like, we need to open that up, don't fall into this trap of, you know, again, the sun being the king. You know, you can like non-gender it, you can mix it up because representation is everything. So Mars, of course, like, look for examples of women that are Marsy, because with bias, you don't see it even when they are, or, you know, you will come up, or you may come up against backlash if you're super Marsy as a very, say, feminine looking woman or not feminine looking woman. But yeah, so it was heaps of fun to do. It was like, I really enjoyed doing the book on the sun, because tapping into the sun is a beautiful feeling, and I encourage anyone to do it. If you have a beleaguered sun, it would probably bring up the issues around that, so that would be interesting. But yeah, tapping into each energy and each quality, and looking back at the history, historians like Bettany Hughes, one of my favorites, she's English, she's got a documentary on Mars, she's got a documentary on Venus, not mentioning astrology, but like, looking into things like that, it will bring so much richness to if you practice or just considering your own chart and how that can express, because we can open it up so much.
When is it coming out?
Oh, so it's coming out in the UK first, which is, I think it's around the 10th of December, November, 17th of November, I think it is, in Australia. US, unfortunately, I think it's 17th of January. It's early January because the pipeline is just so, and distribution's been really disrupted. It's still disrupted because of everything and supply chain. So I'm going to miss Christmas, unfortunately. But you can be sneaky and order it from England free, postage from Book Depository, and get it before Christmas.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And where can people find you?
Oh, so I'm at astroallstars.com with a Z. Astro All Stars. You can always find me there. I'm on Instagram here and there. I do a monthly forecast on the Astrology University podcast. I'm back on my own Astro All Stars podcast, but it has gaps because if I'm writing, I've got to bring Saturn in and limit things. And that's one of the things that does get limited, but it's rolling. It's rolling. And I do interviews on there, and I'm loving this party for four because I did a Pride pod with two other people. I was like, oh, I'm liking this. Yes, more.
It's been fun.
We would like to thank everyone for being here, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Stay cosmic. Stay cosmic.